You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Marisol in Texas. And she reached out because she's new to play therapy. So Marisol, welcome. You'll never turn back. This is the best career path ever, as we all can attest to as part of the Play Therapy Podcast family. And she mentioned that she's currently working in a community where a school shooting occurred at an elementary school campus. So obviously, really tough scenario. And her question is related to trauma in the playroom. And I thought that would be really helpful for us to understand. Interestingly, you know, it's funny how things line up in weeks. I just last week in the year-long coaching program, we talked about handling trauma and kids that have a traumatic background and what that looks like in the child-centered process. So we just talked about that in our meetings last week. And then now I'm answering this question this week. So I think this is something that's really relevant and helpful. So her specific question is, would you be able to discuss what therapists should be looking for in post-traumatic play? And then specifically a further explanation of healthy processing versus toxic play. So thank you, Marisol, for the question, and I'm happy to discuss this. So I think what I'd like to share just before I get into my thoughts about specifically when something like that in the community has happened, what you may notice. One of the things that we talked about in the coaching program last week is that we have to understand that our approach does not change. So I want to make it very clear, you know, if you've been with me for any length of time, you know I'm vehemently opposed to this intervention with this population kinds of workshops and conferences and trainings and whatever, because the child-centered model is universally helpful. So Marisol, just to be very clear, you're not going to do anything other than the child-centered approach, even with these children that have been exposed to this traumatic event in the school shooting. So I want to make that very clear. We don't change using the four pillars. We don't change the reflective responses. We don't change any of the rules of thumb. All of that remains consistent in kids with a trauma background. Now, what is helpful to understand is that there will be some nuances of kids that have gone through trauma. And so one of the things that we talked about last week is that they can be slow to trust and slow to build that rapport and relationship that takes place in the initiation and the warm-up stage and phase. So it's helpful to recognize that when, and I guess for clarification's sake, if there was a recent singular trauma event, like a school shooting, it may present a little differently than a history of trauma. So a child that has had a history of medical complications, a history of witnessing domestic violence, a history of traumatic events in the home, that will be different than a singular event that recently occurred. So there will kind of be some nuances there. However, we do need to recognize that they tend to be a little less quick to get in and trust and build the rapport and the relationship because they're trying to self-preserve. And that guardedness is their survival. That's really important. So keep that in mind as you are working with any kids with a trauma background. And I think one other noteworthy point, just kind of as an umbrella thought, is we do not need to know about a trauma background before we begin to work with the child. So we've talked about this before. What do you need to know before you take a child back for their first play session? Yes, you all shouted it. Just their name. So when we think about that, we only need to know their name, even if we are not made aware of any kind of trauma exposure, it will come out. And so sometimes when we have those parent consultations and parents divulge that information, it helps us to connect the dots a little easier. But it is not a necessity. So if the child is working on trauma, if they need to process trauma, if they are dealing with some kind of traumatic event, when they are ready and when they feel that they have the capacity to address it, they will. So Marisol, let me share some thoughts with you specifically about what you will do in the playroom, because I think that we need to be equipped with some areas of focus, if you will. So we don't change what we're doing, but I think it is helpful to know that in certain scenarios, we can focus on one thing more than another. So number one, when we're dealing with kids that have gone through a traumatic experience or an event or have a history of trauma, enlarging the meaning is really important for those types of kids because they need to understand that there are universal norms so that they don't feel alone and isolated and they don't think that they're the only ones going through this and they're the only ones that know what this is like and they're struggling and no one else is. So therefore, when we enlarge the meaning as they're playing, that's really important. And so here's an example. Kids that have gone through some kind of trauma, one of the things that I like to say is they either fight or they fall apart. And so you have kids that are just an absolute wreck and they're falling apart. And then you have kids that are fighters. And in either scenario, they have the trauma manifesting itself in different ways. So the ones who are falling apart, they don't feel that they have the coping skills, the tools, the resilience, the problem solving, the capacity to deal with it. So we would enlarge that, right? So as the child is playing and there's learned helplessness and they're like, I can't do it. It's so scary. I don't know how, whatever it is that they're saying, we say, sometimes it's hard when we feel like we can't do things. Sometimes it's hard when we don't understand how to solve something. So that normalization of the enlargement and where their experience has taken them is really powerful. Then you have the fighters that, for example, they get hurt in the playroom and they go, that didn't hurt. I didn't even feel that. That didn't even hit me. And there's like a bruise or they're bleeding or there's clearly an injury, right? And the fighters will downplay everything because that is their survival, right? So in that case, we would enlarge that. Oh, you don't want me to think that you got hurt. Sometimes it's hard to admit that we get hurt. And so when we enlarge those types of things, it is very powerful for these kids so that they understand that this is a universal experience. So that's one suggestion I would have. The second is you really need to lean into the child-centered approach and trust not only the process, because it works, but we also trust the child. And the idea is that we are not going to bring the trauma up. We are not going to force them to talk about it. We have no expectation that they need to verbally dialogue or process this. And this is what we usually get. When a kid comes in with a history of trauma, the expectation from mom, dad, teacher, principal, guidance counselor, whomever, is how are you going to talk about this with them? And actually, one of the participants in my coaching program just had that very same experience last week. Do you see how everything converges? It's crazy. You have this expectation of dialogue, right? I'm air quoting. We have to talk about this. And so this participant was meeting with a guardian ad litem, and the guardian was insistent that the child have to talk about the abuse and the trauma. And the therapist kept saying, but the child-centered model, this and that and the other. So it was a lot of psychoeducation and helping them understand and process. And the guardian was just having none of it and essentially said, we're going to have to find another therapist if you're not going to dialogue about this. I have always dialogued with kids about their abuse and trauma. And I thought, and therein lies the problem, right? Because an 8-year-old child does not have abstract reasoning. An 8-year-old child does not have the verbal capacity to process things. An 8-year-old child does not have enough of an emotional understanding to make sense of all of this. So we force kids to do something that adults can do because we think that's the best way. And the child-centered model says we meet them where they are. We let them process it in their way, their time, and in their method. And it is usually through their play. So we have to trust that kids know they need to work on it, and they will. But the time, the tools, and the opportunity have to be provided for them. So we give them the time to feel ready. We give them the tools with the therapeutic guide rails that we provide verbally in the playroom. And then the opportunity is each week they come, they have the decision to make. Am I ready to face this today or not? And so again, we don't have an intervention. We just allow the process to unfold as it naturally will. And one of the ways that trauma is resolved in a child-centered playroom is the child will repetitively play something out again and again and again to desensitize themselves. So either the emotions are not as heightened as they were, the experience is not as overwhelming as it was, they can rewrite the narrative, they can change the story, they will work on the play so that it helps them feel less overwhelmed by what they went through. And just because there was a school shooting does not mean that a child is necessarily going to play out a school shooting. But they will play out some other kind of danger or other kind of peril or other kind of fear or other kind of good versus bad or, you know, catastrophic event. Why? Because their emotions are involved, their experience is involved, and they will make sense of it so that it desensitizes and it helps them to process and feel capable of managing the feelings that come with it. So their emotions are always involved in their processing. And that's why the beauty of the child-centered model is they don't have to say anything. They're feeling it all. And so as they process, their feelings address what's going on. And one final thought, I think often the biggest expectation for therapy with kids is the problem gets addressed, end quote. So, you know, this child is aggressive, address it. This child is violent, address it. This child is, you know, tantruming, address it. They've gone through trauma, address it. They've gone through abuse, address it. And that puts a lot of burden on the therapist because the therapist has to handle that. That's on the therapist's shoulders. And in a case of trauma, many adults in a child's world will think that if they bring it up, it will re-traumatize them. So no one will talk to the child about it. And the irony is they want the therapist to talk to the child about it, but no one else in the child's life will even bring it up. It's like this thing happened, but we're going to sweep it under the rug. It's the elephant in the room. And, you know, mum's the word, because if I bring anything up about the school shooting, it's going to remind you of it and it's going to make it worse and it's going to re-traumatize you and all of this fear and concern. But the therapist is supposed to bring it up to the child. And that's just ironic to me. And so I think the way we combat that is when no one brings it up, it actually makes it very clear to the child that they're not safe to talk about it. And that's why in the playroom, it's the child is in complete control. The child has all of the freedom, all of the autonomy, all of the ability to say or do or process anything and everything. So when you create the safe space and when you create the unconditional acceptance and love in the environment of the playroom, the child inherently understands this is different. Miss Brenna can handle this. Miss Brenna won't care if I bring this up. Now, there might be a test. We talked about that last week in the coaching program too. There may be a test. So the kid may dip their toe in the water, as I like to say, and see what your reaction is. So they may only bring up a fraction of something, and they're assessing your readiness and ability to handle it. And you get one shot at that. So be very mindful of your ability to handle and hold kids' junk, specifically trauma and abuse and things like that, because that's not easy to hold, but that's our job. So you need to be emotionally and mentally prepared to handle that when the test comes. So if the child starts to address it or starts to bring it up, or you can see that they're ready to go there, and your reaction is anything other than unconditional love and acceptance and complete freedom and autonomy to do anything they need to do, they'll backpedal and they'll never bring it up again. They'll bring up other things. They'll work on all kinds of other stuff in their play, but they will not process the trauma because they don't think you can handle it. So that is a relevant point. But when we provide the be with attitudes for these kids, they just innately say, okay, this is the place where I can deal with this. No one else will talk to me about it. No one else will let me process it. No one else can handle this. But in the playroom, Miss Brenna can. And that is the environment that we want. And so Marisol, my only other thought, you mentioned specifically an explanation of healthy processing versus toxic play. I am not really sure where the toxic play phrase is coming from. I've never seen any kind of toxic play in the playroom. And what I mean by that is about any topic. When a kid is working through something, it's productive and it's therapeutic. So I don't ever see any indication that any play of any issue has any toxicity to it. And so I think maybe what you're asking is, what would we do if we felt that the child was not moving through the trauma effectively? I'm kind of making an assumption there, so I apologize if I'm wrong. But if you're trying to ask, how do we look at healthy processing versus if a kid gets stuck? It's rare, if ever, that a child gets stuck in their play and they really don't know how to recover from what they're processing, and they really kind of can't move past a certain element in their play. It's only happened a handful of times in my almost 20 years. And in that scenario, it's kind of a two-part process, in my opinion. The first is we trust the child and we trust the process and we trust the therapeutic environment to do what it will do. So sometimes it takes longer, but kids do work through it and overcome whatever they were once stuck on. And then second of all, that's when the enlargement of the meaning becomes really important. Because if they're stuck, they're either scared or they don't really feel equipped to move on. And so the normalization and the neutralization and the acknowledgement of where they are is normal and appropriate, that will give them the fuel to say, okay, good, now what do I do about it? So it's rare, if ever, that a child gets stuck, but if you do sense that they are, just really focus on enlarging the meaning. That seems to help the best. So thank you so much, Marisol, for reaching out. I appreciate that you are new to the play therapy world and that you found us and that you're now part of the Play Therapy Podcast family. To each and every one of you, this is an honor. This is such a privilege. It's the early part of November, and I'm thinking about this last year, and you know, we're coming to the end of 2023. And when I started this podcast last summer, 2022, I really had no idea what this would become. And it is so exciting to me. It is uplifting. It is encouraging. It's so many things. And I hope that you feel the same way. I appreciate your consistency, your faithfulness. Thank you for sharing this with your colleagues and your friends and your coworkers. The family is growing exponentially, and there are more and more people listening and more people reaching out. So let's keep this going. Let's let this be a wave that hits the world so that we can impact kids and their families forever. What an honor it is. So I'm grateful for each and every one of you. If you'd like to reach out, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.